Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. Today's show is dedicated to comfort watching and family-friendly TV and movies. And up now, we have an animated film that became a surprise hit of 2021. Just as soon as it dropped, The Mitchells vs. the Machines reached number one on Netflix and stayed there for the next 9 days. Just this week, in a rare victory lap of sorts, it got a 2-day theatrical release, despite having been available to stream already for the last 6 months. And it makes sense to put the movie up on the big screen because much of its success lies in its quirky and meta and bonkers visuals, which are full of cultural references and spoofs, both highbrow and lowbrow. But the other part of its effectiveness comes in the way it probes questions about what it means to be human and part of a family. For those who haven't seen it yet, here's the plot. Robots have taken over the world and imprisoned humans. The only family, the Mitchells, still free to stop the mechanical overlords, has its own issues, which could get in the way of saving humanity from a power-hungry cell phone AI operating system named PAL, ruler of the Internet of Things, and any kind of machine, including the sleek new companion robots that were created to replace her. Think of a really angry Alexa or Siri with a bad attitude. In this clip from the film, the villain, PAL, explains to Mark, the head of the tech company, why she's decided to do away with humans. The psycho cell phone is voiced by a very funny Oscar winner, Olivia Colman.
Total human containment? How?
Are you with the government?
The military?
Like, who's behind this?
It's your old friend.
Oh! There she is. How are you?
I'm great.
Cool. Yeah. Wow. I guess cell phones are bad for you.
That's egg on my face.
You think cell phones are the problem? Are you insane? I gave you all boundless knowledge, endless tools for creativity, and allowed you to magically talk face-to-face with your loved ones anywhere on Earth. And I'm the bad guy? Maybe the bad guy is the person who treated me like this. Poke, poke, swipe, poke, swipe, poke, poke, pinch, zoom, shrink, zoom.
Bring me pizza. Play me Taylor Swift. No, I hate that song. Give me some nachos.
The film is the product of some active imaginations, including producers Phil Lord and Christopher Miller. You know a lot of their work, including the Academy Award-winning Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. And co-writer and film director Mike Rianda, the creative director behind the Disney series Gravity Falls, who based a lot of the family relationships, if not the robot domination and giant Furbies, on his own family. Rianda spent 6 years making this movie. So when he joined us back when it came out, I started by asking him what was the initial baby seed of the idea for this film.
The baby seed of the idea was that I knew these movies took a long time. So I wanted to sort of evoke something that I had like a eternal furnace of love for in my heart, which is my insane family. and basically sort of I sort of tried to combine that with what I loved when I was 9 years old, which is killer robots. And then sort of like as an adult, I thought a lot about, you know, if robots and AI can sort of do what humans can do, what is it about humans that are that is essential, and what is it about humans that is like worth saving? And it ends up being sort of our relationships and our collaborations with each other. And sort of even though they can be trying at times, and families can be dysfunctional at times, those relationships are worth fighting for.
So that was the original idea. At what point did you know that this was going to become a reality?
The second it was released.
That long into it?
The whole time I was like, well, they're going to cancel this, right? it's too crazy. But seriously, no, it really took it like, you know, there was, because it's an original idea and those are sort of, in Hollywood, those are such a risky bet. We really had to sort of like prove ourselves every step of the way with this movie. So it kind of always felt like we were on the brink of not getting made, But I'm so glad we were. And, you know, I guess when we were finishing the film like a month ago, it was like it became real to me that like, oh, they're actually going to release this. Wow. Great.
So at what point, because what you're talking about, it is so different. It looks so different in that really good bonkers way with so much going on. At what point in the creative process, Mike, did you know you wanted to take the visual style and signature beyond just some excellent animation?
Yeah, I mean, that was something that was really important to us. And we had an incredible team, both on the 2D side, who designed it, and the 3D side, who turned those designs into like wizards at ImageWorks into actual 3D characters. Because basically, since it's a movie about humans and about the humanity's flaws, we wanted that humanity on sort of every frame, every still frame of the movie. And then as a kicker, we thought since Katie was a filmmaker, it would be fun to sort of have the idea be that she's almost editing the movie herself. And that kind of actually gained traction when we found out that made you feel closer to her as a character and understand her perspective better.
What were you going for in terms of the way it looked when you had to try to explain to executives what you were doing?
We basically were just trying to, you know, we said that song and dance. And mm-hmm. then we basically just were in love with our production designer, Lindsay Olivares' illustrations, because they were so, she always would describe them as like a love letter to humanity's flaws. And even though, you know, the spaces were dirty and, you know, the houses weren't clean, they still felt sort of warm and loving. And we were just trying to say, like, how can we actually just make the movie look like the art? Because oftentimes when you're looking at like these art of books, the art is like fantastic. And then the movie looks different and sometimes mm-hmm. like a little sanitized. So we were like, how can we make it look exactly like this art? And, you know, God bless the 3D team for figuring out a way to do it.
My guest is Mike Rianda, director of The Mitchells versus the Machines. So the family is at the heart of the story. They're a little bit dysfunctional. The daughter, Katie, is voiced by Abby Jacobson. She lives her life online. She's passionate about her filmmaking. And the dad, voiced by Danny McBride, lives in the analog worlds and gives things like hammers for gifts and thinks that's great. How did you and your collaborators, you know, sort of protect the story from getting lost in the razzle dazzle of the animation?
Sure. I mean, it's very, you know, I think the way we did it was we started the movie. It was, you know, because you make these movies and storyboards and drawings first, and you do temporary voices, and you're able to watch it before you do any of the finished animation. And I think the way we were able to make it work was we made sure that the story was working without any doodads and flashiness, you know. And it was really about making the emotional scenes, especially between Rick and Katie, the daughter and the father, really grounded and treating these like they're real people with real emotions that could be hurt and heartbroken and, you know, moved to tears and that sort of thing. And if we really just let those moments play out as if this were a, you know, family drama, and then sort of try to balance that with our sort of more chaotic mm-hmm. instincts. And then sort of, so once it was working without all that stuff, then we were able to add in that later and sort of have it be this kind of extra layer on something that we hopefully thought was already working.
How much of the Mitchell family is actually based on your family?
100%. The whole thing. No. My dad looks exactly like Rick, and he is sort of a crazed outdoorsman himself. And there's actually some stories in the movie that were directly pulled from my life, that even though there's a giant Furby in the movie, they were like, this is too crazy for the movie. Like some of my personal stories from my own life were like too ungrounded to put in the family section. My family's kind of playfully, lovingly eccentric, I would say.
The mom in the film is played by Maya Rudolph, and she makes everything better. And you voiced a little brother
Yeah.
What do you like about being a voice performer, and specifically in this film?
I would say, I mean, it was really just a product of necessity, because we had much better actors and comedians to come in to do those voices, and they were really funny and great, and they brought a lot to it. But there was something about the performance that was just in the temp track that I had done sort of sleepily, you know, just trying to get through it, that was sticking to the screen more weirdly. And I think it's because I am a little brother of two siblings that were 10 years older than me and left for college when I was about Anna's age. I feel like that vulnerability might somehow be shining through, perhaps, because I love my brother and sister, and I was sad that they left. So I think that's ultimately what ended up working about it, as much as I regret being in it.
Well, with that in mind, this clip I pulled is going to be even sweeter. This is a clip from the film where Aaron is a little bummed out because it's the night before Katie heads to film school. And he loves dinosaurs, by the way. This is from the film The Mitchells versus the Machines.
Katie, you know how velociraptors usually hunt in pairs? Well, what happens when one leaves the pack and
Oh, dude, don't worry. You'll make new friends. And maybe you can meet another smart, charming, dinosaur-loving nerd. Or lady nerd.
What? No! Who would want that? That's crazy. I can't breathe. Do you really think I'll be okay without you?
I know you will. Raptor bash.
That's 10 times sweeter now, knowing that it's, you really felt like that when you were little Mike Randa. My guess is Mike Randa, director of The Mitchells versus the Machines. We have a call for you, Mike. This is Ubispe on line one. Hi, thanks for calling All of It.
Oh, hi, how you doing? How you doing, everybody?
Tell us a little bit about the film, what you liked about the film.
I mean, it was a great movie, I have to say that, because actually I was introduced with my five-year-old son, 3 days ago. I was scrolled down on Netflix, tried to find something to watch, and I said, I have a movie to watch, let's watch. And then I watched the movie, and then I noticed that he already knows the scripts from some part of the movie. So, you watch this movie? He said, yeah. No, Daddy, I didn't watch. That's why I watched. And then as I watched it, I realized he watched because he knew the scripts. he knew some parts of the scripts of the movie. And then it was so exciting for me. And then when I hear this interview, I'm driving extra. I have to pull over. I say, no, I have to congratulate the movie. It's really good. And for me personally, I love the when the movie finished, and then they'll introduce everybody that participated in the movie, the producer, and then they show the pictures when they were young and stuff like that. That was very creative. I really love the part.
Thanks for calling in. That's hilarious, Mike. His kid had clearly watched the movie 3 or 4 times before. I do want to ask you before you go about sort of the satire in the film about us and our devices. And it was really kind of interesting because some of it is quite poignant. You know, some of it is how the digital divide comes between this father and this daughter, and how people can't look up from their phones. And there's all sorts of like meta overlays in there. How did you decide to weigh sort of the serious, you know, here's something to think about part of the film with just the laughs?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I we found, you know, through our own experiences in watching the movie and also in, you know, watching other things and stuff, like, I feel like if it's just comedy all the time with no point, you get a toothache. You're like, what is this? What am I watching? Like, you need to have a little bit of few nutrients in there to make sure that it's resonant and that it sticks with you, you know, even after you watch it. It's not just sort of something that fades out of your mind. And you know, with the technology in the movie, you know, technology has brought us a lot of joy, you know, on the internet. And also I found out I could be a cartoonist on the internet, and I would go on these internet, you know, animation chat rooms and stuff. And that's sort of how I found my people. So we knew that we wanted to be a little more even-handed with it, because even though there are totally problems with technology, and especially technology companies and that sort of thing, and the incentive structures that they have in place, but there's also a lot of joy to be had. So we're trying to sort of balance those two things.
Yeah, it's a really, really smart film. And for anybody who is a movie buff, you will be stopping frame, frame, frame. I mean, there's Pal, who's kind of like Hal, of course. there's all kinds of Easter eggs throughout this film. There are entire videos devoted to the Easter eggs in this film. What can you tell us what one of your favorites is, whether it's a movie reference or some kind of animation reference? One of your favorite Easter eggs in the film?
I think my favorite Easter egg is, because the artist did such a good job on it, is at some point Katie lists, she's like, you know, my 48 short films, and sort of, we never had enough time on the movie, and me and Jeff Rowe, my co-writer and co-director, who's a genius, we wrote a bunch of really quick, like, movie parodies, and the artist, you know, who could have just said, no, we're not going to do that. Mm-hmm. Instead, like, really, we're like, all right, we're going to do 48 movie posters, and we have, like, Monchi, Fear Eats the Soul, and a Hazard burger puppet, and a lot of, like, parodies of sort of, you know, fancy movies that we like with the dumbest possible elements in them. and, you know, because it's sort of like, because we were that kind of kid, you know, we were kids that wanted to be cinephiles and watched all these movies and fell in love with movies. So we just wanted to sort of like reflect that with the character of Katie.
That was my conversation with the Mitchells versus the Machines co-writer and director Mike Rianda.